This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Don't forget, we've got a Freedom Series event happening in under a week on Tuesday of next week. Tickets are on sale. We released a whole bunch of balcony seats. KTTH.com. They are going fast. They're only $10. Purchase at KTTH.com. There's lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So the boycotting bully from Parkland, who has turned tragedy into some unreasonable activism, he's announced his next boycott, and boy, has it fallen flat so far. David Hogg, one of the CNN five, the Parkland five, who showed up on CNN virtually every single day for about a month, he now wants people to boycott Vanguard Group and BlackRock, two investment firms, because they invest in gun manufacturers. And his tweets in talking about boycotts, they're just getting weird with some of their emojis. When he was announcing a boycott was coming, he just had this like smiley face emoji alongside with an anxious-looking Kermit the Frog meme. It's just, it's childish. And yeah, it's childish because he's 18 years old. He is a child. He is a child who is getting into social justice activism, and it comes off as petty. It comes off as he doesn't quite understand the implications of what it is he's getting into. This one had another emoji, had a little winky face. He said, BlackRock and Vanguard Group are two of the biggest investors in gun manufacturers. If you use them, feel free to let them know. And then he followed up by including a hashtag boycott. BlackRock boycott Vanguard. So I decided actually to take him up on his offer because he said if you use them, feel free to let them know. And I use Vanguard. They have one of my Roth IRA accounts. I opened it maybe a decade ago, and it's been doing fine for me. I'm glad I'm involved in them. I sent them a tweet yesterday. I said, look, hey, Vanguard, I use you and I like you. I'll stop using you if you decide to placate an anti-gun activist by getting out of gun manufacturers. So as a consumer, because I have tons of options as it relates to these types of funds, tons of options, endless options, countless options. I have so many, I can't even keep track of them. I will happily go somewhere else and give my money elsewhere if Vanguard decides that they're going to get out of gun manufacturers. If they get out of it, and they were going to get out of certain aspects of it because it's not necessarily the best place to put my money at the time, that's different. But if they're going to get out of it because David Hogg told them to do so, sorry, I no longer trust you. I would only want to put my money in an organization that isn't filled with a bunch of cowards who are scared of an 18-year-old kid who is abusing the power that he has been given by the media. That's me. Now, the thing about BlackRock, who I don't personally invest in, BlackRock already has an investment fund that doesn't actually include gun manufacturers. They decided to do that because they believe that there was enough of a demand from their potential clientele that wanted to invest but didn't want to have anything to do with gun manufacturers. Good for them. They made a decision based on the market. They have given you they're giving you options, and yet they're being called out by David Hogg. David Hogg is targeting them, and that is bizarre. And that gets into the bullying that we're talking about. Because what he's basically saying, and what the message is coming from, not just David Hogg, but generally speaking, activists on the left, because we're not really seeing this anymore coming from the right. We used to see this from the right, but we don't see this anymore because I think the right understood the destruction that this can cause. What we're seeing from the left is, you unequivocally do what I say, do what I want, or you'll suffer the consequences. This is a kid who is drunk on power. Power the media has given him, specifically CNN and MSNBC. He's empowered by a whole bunch of other crazy liberal activists on Twitter who make him feel like what he's doing is the right thing. And he doesn't know any better because he's an 18-year-old. That is bullying. That's what he's doing. And yet, weirdly, on this, there's scant CNN coverage. I saw an article on the CNN Money, but on air, you're not really hearing all that much about the David Hogg protest this time. Turns out, at least according to one report, BlackRock invests a hell of a lot of money into CNN's parent company. And so maybe that's why they're deciding a little bit, in this case, some reporter discretion. Which is funny, because it shows you also how hypocritical CNN is. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So the thing is, you know, people are giving WSDOT, the Washington State Department of Transportation, a little bit of a hard time over something that happened yesterday. I don't think we should. They're actually, for the first time, I think, in its history, they're being honest in how they feel about drivers in Washington State. They're apologizing because on a sign, there was a message that was a little inappropriate. Some people felt inappropriate. I don't think it was inappropriate. Ruslan Kozlov is a driver. He was going down southbound I-5. He was near exit 154B. And he saw one of the traffic signs, one of the digital traffic signs on top, and he took a photo of it. It said simply, "You suck." The letter U and then suck, and that's all it said. And he posted the photo to Reddit, so it got some people talking. It started to spread. It went viral, as the kids say. And WSDOT had to apologize. They said it was due to a training error. What training error could possibly lead to someone saying, "You suck," on the digital traffic board? What's the training issue? Here's what I think happened. They say, "Hey, you know, we got to make sure that it works. Can you just give a message to the drivers about how WSDOT feels about them?" You just book, "You suck." That's how they feel about drivers. WSDOT hates drivers. It's weird because they're in charge of transportation infrastructure in this state, and yet they hate you. They absolutely loathe you. They want you off the roads. They go out of their way to implement systems that make traffic worse, so you actually get out of your car. They hate you. They believe you suck. So why should they apologize? They're apologizing. They said, "This was an inappropriate message, and we apologize if anyone was offended." They go on to say, "This was due to a training error and clearly a mistake. We are taking steps to ensure this doesn't happen again." I don't think it was clearly a mistake. And I don't think we should ask them to apologize for taking a position that they believe in. That's what they believe. I, for one, am a believer in honesty. And if WSDOT is going to be honest with us, finally, because, you know, for the longest time they were telling us the express toll lanes on I-405 between Bothell and Bellevue didn't actually impact traffic. Traffic's never been better. It's the best traffic we've ever seen in the world. Oh my God, so good. I mean, that was a lie. They're lying about the impact of the express toll lanes. They're lying about what the end, what their end goal is in tolling all the roads and all the highways in Washington. They're lying about that. Kudos to them. Yeah, kudos. They're telling the truth. They're telling the truth. You suck. They hate you.
Okay.
I feel like, look, I'm not going to get on an agency for being honest. We ask for agencies to be honest with us all the time. On a regular basis, we say, "Stop being dishonest. Why are you lying to us? Why are you saying there's not a war on cars when there clearly is one?" Well, here they are. They're being honest.
So you want more road signs with demeaning comments?
It's not demeaning. It's just it's what they feel. They believe that the drivers suck. Well, you're not a driver. You suck, Darren. You're an Uber driver on top of everything. You suck, according to the Washington State Department of Transportation.
I know
that, but so does it. It kind of feels a little bit better knowing that they're finally honest with us. That's all I'm saying, right? I'm all for this. If you are, you can send me a text message on the KTDH hotline, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. The KTDH hotline is brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Don't forget your text messages at 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message on the KTDH hotline brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Don't forget, we've got an event coming up on Tuesday of next week. Me, Todd Herman, take on King County Sheriff Mitzi Joe Hanknick and Kyle Radio's Dave Ross on the topic of gun control, gun violence, and school safety. It's going to be happening in Edmonds. We've released the final bit of tickets on the balcony, and they're all about half sold out already. We didn't think that so many people were going to be interested in attending, and then you start to think about the fact that this is an incredibly important topic. Tickets are only $10. It's all reserved seating. And so lo and behold, we are selling out very quickly. We already sold out of our regular floor seats. We sold those out last week. I'm pretty certain we'll sell out of the balcony as well, because we've already got one, two, three sections completely sold out in the balcony. So if you want to purchase your tickets today, go to ktth.com or just send me a text with the keyword tickets to the number 1-800-465-8770. If you're a cheapskate and you don't want to spend the $10, I've also got on our Facebook page a link to a contest. We're going to give away four pairs of tickets to the event, and only four pairs. So it's not going to be easy for you to win, but you should just try to join and see what happens. Facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. So we're going to talk about later on in the show, probably a segment or two, about this new anti-gun study. But I want first to talk about a bit of information that happened yesterday, because it's a follow-up on a story we covered last week when we talked with Fox News Radio's John Decker, where there was a move to pass legislation, bipartisan legislation, that would end up protecting Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor, from being fired. There's this concern that President Trump is going to fire Robert Mueller. I'm not sure where that is coming from, other than Trump saying he's unhappy with Robert Mueller, which of course makes sense. I don't know any president who would be happy with Robert Mueller if they were in a similar circumstance. But I haven't heard anyone actually say from the administration that they're going to fire him. Now, that rumor has been out there for a long time. It's possible that that's what's there, but the president hasn't made any comments specifically. In fact, the only comments I've heard are from people like Paul Ryan, House Speaker Ryan, who last week when he announced he wasn't running for re-election, he said, yeah, I've been assured multiple times that President Trump is not going to fire Robert Mueller. Well, this bipartisan bill is not going to see the light of day, not on the Senate floor, because the Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, says basically exactly what Paul Ryan said. Here he is explaining why he's not going to give a vote on this bill to Neil Cavuto of Fox News.
Well, that's not necessary. There's no indication that Mueller's going to be fired. I don't think the president's going to do that. And just as a practical matter, even if we passed it, why would he sign it?
You don't think it's a good idea?
No, it's not.
And you don't think it's something the president would entertain or should entertain?
Well, I don't think he should fire Mueller, and I don't think he's going to. So this is a piece of legislation that's not necessary in my judgment.
Well, obviously, a number of your colleagues fear it enough to say it should be in there as an insurance.
Yeah, but I'm the one who decides what we take to the floor. That's right. My responsibility as the majority leader, and we'll not be having this on the floor of the Senate.
Would you be shocked if he did fire him?
Yes, I don't think he should, and I don't think he will.
So there's some interesting dynamics at play here, because number one, I do think that this narrative is being forwarded mostly by Democrats and some concerned Republicans, because they want to both make sure that Trump doesn't fire Robert Mueller for a number of reasons, good reasons. I don't think you should fire him either. But number two, I think a lot of Democrats are pushing this forward because they want to create this doubt in the minds of the American people. They want to create a narrative that suggests that the president is corrupt. And the fact that he might be considering firing this guy is clear evidence that Mueller probably has something on the president as it relates to collusion. It's a phony narrative. But number two, if Donald Trump has the right to fire Robert Mueller, and this legislation seems to imply that he does, otherwise they wouldn't need to actually protect him from being fired, well then, this legislation is an overstep. It's an overreach. You know, you hear people using the term constitutional crisis. Oh, if he fires Robert Mueller, I think it's a constitutional crisis. Well, not if he has the constitutional right to fire him. That does not create a constitutional crisis. It doesn't. It would be unwise. He would pay the consequences of firing Robert Mueller, right? I mean, depending on who wins in November, whether we're if the Democrats win, they're going to try to impeach President Trump. And so President Trump would likely be unwilling to fire Robert Mueller, especially if he knows he did nothing wrong, even if this investigation is damaging to his administration, because he knows he's just feeding in to the desires of the Democrats. They're going to try to impeach him, which is why this November election is so important. You don't even have to be a fan of President Trump to be against impeachment. Impeachment is not good for the country. It wasn't good for the country when Republicans did it to Bill Clinton. It backfired on Republicans when they did it to Bill Clinton. In fact, the talk and the actual act of impeachment is why Newt Gingrich was kicked out of power, which is why he lost his power, which is why Republicans lost his power. When the economy is doing particularly well, as it is right now, it's doing exceptionally well, as it was at the time when they were impeaching Bill Clinton, people are like, this is just so petty and silly. You're just playing politics. I just got a raise. My taxes are going down. My community is doing well because of all the new jobs. Joblessness is down. The real unemployment rate is down. The people who exited the job market, they're coming back into the job market. Things are good. Why are you messing with the president? Even if you're a Democrat, even if you're an independent, even if you're a moderate Republican who doesn't like Donald Trump. Love to get your feedback. 1-800-465-877. Don't forget to purchase your tickets right now. KTTH.com to the Freedom Series, Guns and Our Children, on Tuesday of next week. Tickets are going fast. It's the Jason Rant Show. Shocking. Parking gets better in Olympia, and concerts will get better in Tacoma. It's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Look, I don't know about you, but I'm getting sick and tired of the media being so hyper-focused on the city of Seattle that they end up ignoring all the important and interesting and, yes, sometimes quirky stories happening all across Washington State. And so at 7:30 weekday mornings on the Jason Rant Show, we do something called the Big Local, where we focus on you and the communities you live in, not the city of Seattle. And we start this morning in Olympia. I am a little bit shocked because I saw a report that suggested parking in Olympia is about to get so much easier this week, thanks to the city's new parking technology in downtown that lets you pay for parking online. Now, the thing is, online parking isn't necessarily easy, and the pay-by-phone method in which they're implementing is not the most tech-friendly in the world. It's kind of like an app that's programmed on Turbo C++, but it's something, I guess. It's something. They're updating their meters, and so now that they've got more technology, yeah, I don't know why anyone would need a tool like this that says you can see your whole parking history. Okay, that's cool. Thanks. You're just using the pay-by-phone app. And you've got that in a lot of other places around Western Washington, and no one really uses it. In fact, I don't know anyone who's ever used the pay-by-phone app. I've never used it myself. Have you guys used it?
Pay-by-phone?
Yeah. Do you know anyone who's ever used it?
No.
Have you ever used it?
No.
It's just no one uses this thing, and we're touting, oh, parking's easier in Olympia. I mean, in theory, it's a good idea because, assuming this works, it gives you a text alert when your time is about to expire. So let's say you're at a restaurant and you're forgetting the fact that your parking is about to expire, or you know it is, and so you feel like you need to rush. You got to leave your date to go put change in the meter. It sends you an alert that says, hey, and you know, in 10 minutes, 15 minutes or whatever, it's about to expire. You can just, you know, add $2 for an hour or whatever the price is from your phone remotely. So that's kind of good, I guess. You'll be able to pay your parking tickets online in case the text doesn't actually come through and you end up getting a ticket. So you can do that online, which is cool. They make it easier to take some more of your money. How about this? You know what's the better and easier way to make parking like less of a nuisance to people who live in Olympia or really anywhere? You make it free. You make it more plentiful instead of charging us for something we've already paid for. We paid for the parking. We paid for the space. We've already paid for it. And now you're charging me to use it again. And you're charging me oftentimes outrageous rates per hour. It's just absolutely ridiculous. All this is doing is making it easier for us to give you our money. And so I don't necessarily look at this as good news as much as they want to park it in that. Hey, that was a pun. Meanwhile, the Tacoma Dome is closing for upgrades, $30 million worth. They're getting rid of the dome and they're making it an octagon. It's going to be a fantastic. No, they're doing some internal stuff. I've not been to the Tacoma Dome in a very long time. I feel like, Darren, you go there, would you just see REO Speedwagon or something there? Rush, Journey.
No,
would
I saw,
you just see that?
Roger Waters was the most recent one, I think.
Now, how is the Tacoma Dome right now inside?
It's a little dated.
Is it like Key Arena dated?
To be nice.
I think it'd be worse than Key
much
Arena.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's 35 years old. It hasn't really had any.
You get
major
a little uncomfortable walking on the bleachers that they bring in and out.
God, that sounds like, I
think you're walking over the, like, the bridge that you have to.
Mm-hmm.
That connects you from the concourse to the bleachers. It's a little scary.
Yeah, I think the last time I was there and the only time I can really even remember being inside was for a professional bull riding event.
Jesus.
It's just. It was interesting. It was an interesting experience.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was.
I'd recommend it at least once in your life.
So here's what they're doing. They're changing all of the seats. No more weird bleachers. No more small chairs. They're doing fold-up contemporary arena-style seats that will add 6 inches of leg room. They're going to be wider because our hips have gotten wider since they were 35 years ago. So if you're a little bit of a bigger gentleman or lady, you'll be able to fit a little bit more comfortably in these seats. They're eliminating the need to store unused seating sections in the parking lot, freeing up parking and reducing the turnaround time between events, which I did not realize that's what they did. Did you know that they put the unused seating in the parking lot?
Yes. Yeah, haven't you seen them?
I haven't seen that before.
If you drive by, you
have. Have I? Maybe
yeah, it takes up a lot of room in the north parking lot there.
They're pretty colorful, actually, too. Yeah. Like orange and blue, I think.
That's, you know, I just don't pay attention to things, which is what a radio host should admit openly during his radio show. So they're not going to do that anymore, which that took a lot of time so that they couldn't necessarily do acts quickly after another. So now they'll be able to do that. And by the way, some of the people have been complaining about lack of parking in the area. You've got the new parking... you've got parking options that were not previously available, now available to you. And they're doing this without impacting the amount of capacity at the Tacoma Dome, which will remain at 22,500. But here's the big deal. New bathrooms. They're updating the bathrooms. You're going to have 300% more bathroom capacity. And the worst part about ever going to a concert or an event of any kind, baseball games, football, soccer, whatever it is having to use the bathroom. Because the lines are incredibly long. The women's lines are exceptionally long. Depending on the venue, you can sometimes have the trough like you're a horse or a pig.
I think Tacoma Dome is one of those.
They're getting rid of that. They're getting rid of that. They're making it all like it's like a bathroom for human beings.
A welcome change.
That's a positive. And what I think is interesting about this is the context in which this is happening. Because we did the story about a month ago or so about the general area right around the Tacoma Dome. It's up for bid for development, where they want to bring in restaurants. They want to bring in some bars and stuff that are a little bit closer to the Tacoma Dome so you can actually make a night out of it. Because as of right now, you kind of have limited options on what it is you can do in the immediate area. And usually you're going to have to drive to the place if there's a bar nearby, because there's a bar nearby or brewery nearby. What was the name of the place? We talked about this last time. It was like their brewery pretty nearby.
It's Sluggo.
Sluggo. And that's not all that close to the Tacoma Dome. And now if you develop this whole part of the area, all of a sudden like, oh, cool. I actually do want to go to a concert there. And maybe it also sends a signal to the bigger acts that says, okay, you know what? This is a cool little spot. I don't need to go into the Seattle area for a concert. I don't need to go to the Paramount. I can go to the Tacoma Dome. No one likes the sound at Key Arena. So let me go to the Tacoma Dome. People will actually show up. People will enjoy it. The context additionally is that more and more people are looking towards Pierce County right now as a place to live rather than expensive King County. And they're saying, you know what? Pierce County is just as good as King County. You've got the same types of really good restaurants, really good shopping, and really good concert venues. And I think putting $30 million into Tacoma Dome is awesome. Now, they say this is all going to get done before the concert in October, I believe it is, for Justin Timberlake. I hope that happens because Justin Timberlake will be upset. And if you've ever seen Justin Timberlake upset when he doesn't get the venue of his choice, let me tell you, it is frightening. It is absolutely 100% terrifying. So they, under the threat of Justin Timberlake and his ire, his anger, his uncontrollable, seething, passionate anger, they promise they're going to get this renovation done before then. So I'm super excited about this because I just generally don't get excited about going to the Tacoma Dome just because it is kind of an older venue and that just doesn't do it for me. This makes me excited. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message or go to our Facebook page. Facebook.com/JasonRantzShow. Good morning, everybody. Live from the Online Trading Academy studio, you're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for telling your friends about the show. I really do appreciate it. can go behind the scenes of the show, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. There's new gun research out that belittles the people who have used a gun to protect themselves from an imminent crime. And NPR is touting this study without reminding you that the guy who's behind the research is notoriously anti-gun. He doesn't think you're a quote-unquote real man if you use a gun in self-defense. The researcher here's name is David Hemenway. He's an anti-gun researcher at Harvard University. His latest analysis said between 2007 and 2011, people defended themselves with a gun in nearly 0.9% of crimes, so less than a percentage point. And by the way, it's not even his analysis. It's printed in a pamphlet from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. He's just going over it. And he took this and he said, this shows you that the risk of owning a gun outweighs the benefits of owning a gun. He tells Here and Now's Robin Young, the average person has basically no chance in their lifetime ever to use a gun in self-defense. But every day, they have a chance to use the gun inappropriately. They have a chance. They get angry. They get scared. So there's a lot wrong with his research. There's a lot wrong with his implications. This guy is anti-gun, so of course there's a lot wrong with this. Now, I'll go with this 0.9% that he gives. But let's be clear. When you shoot a bad guy, they don't always go to the hospital because they're bad guys, right? If you use a gun to ward a bad guy off, let's say someone is threatening to rob you and you pull your weapon and then they run, you don't always call 911. You don't. And so this number is underreported. The Washington Post, in fact, says that there are about 100,000 people who use guns in self-defense every single year. But let's go with the 0.9%. You have one in 614 million chance of dying in a school shooting. That as a percentage is way, way, way lower than 0.9%. And yet we're going overboard in some cases in coming up with legislation to stop school shootings. Just because the percentage is low doesn't mean we don't do anything, right? And yet because the percentage is low, David Hemenway is using this as an opportunity to try to get people to give up their guns, to push more gun control. Hemenway says it outweighs the benefits because he has had previous research that's often cited by anti-gun folks that says you have a higher risk of death when you keep a gun in your home. Have you heard of that study? Do you recall that? Because that's what the left uses all the time. They're pointing to David Hemenway over at Harvard University. You have a higher risk of death and injury when you keep a gun in a home versus not having a gun in the home, which is why you should get rid of guns, which is why when people say, well, if you own a gun, you're putting your whole family at risk, they're counting on you not actually reading the study. Well, no one tells you because they didn't actually read the study, or maybe they're just flatly dishonest. Is in this sample that he looked at for that data, he was talking about families of criminals. He was including in his sample, because I believe it was a part of Atlanta that he originally looked at. He looked at different neighborhoods, and at least one, possibly two of the neighborhoods he looked at, I believe it was four in total, had very high rates of crime. In that sample, he was looking at criminals. Criminals were included in his sample, meaning you were looking at a family or group of people who were living in a home who were gang members, who had guns in the home, many of them illegal, and he counts as dangerous in the home because a bad guy might go to another bad guy's house and gunfire would be exchanged and someone would get injured or killed. Now, it's not a shock that when gang members and criminals have guns, people tend to die, and it's usually other bad guys. But he includes that in the data, which I believe taints the data. It incredibly taints the data. He's not open about that. The people who cite his study are not open about that. They just go with the end result because they believe the end result will convince you to get rid of your gun. They believe that the end result of that study is enough to continue this narrative that guns are dangerous, that guns are evil, that people who own guns are irresponsible, that your family is somehow at risk because you have a gun in the household, even if you're handling it responsibly, even if you're storing it responsibly. They don't care about the actual details that went into the to that study. But it's also important that you know who Hemingway actually is. This is a guy who has a deep disdain, not just for guns, but for people who use guns, even if they use it for self-defense. So he did an interview with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation many years ago. And he was asked, what were the next steps we can take in order to address gun violence in this country? And here's what he said. This is a quote. We need to see a social norm change on gun violence. Instead of it being the mark of a real man that you can shoot somebody at 50 feet and kill them with a gun, the mark of a real man is that you would never do anything like that. You'd show that you were stronger than they were and smarter, and not just that you had some weapon. The gun is a great equalizer because it makes wimps as dangerous as people who really have the skill and bravery, and so I'd like to have this notion that anyone using a gun is a wuss. There aren't anybody to be looked up to. There's somebody to look down at because they couldn't defend themselves or couldn't protect others without using a gun. That's how he feels. That's what he feels about people who use guns. You're just some weak person who's not smart enough, who's not strong enough to figure out how to defend yourself without a gun. A real man doesn't kill another person who threatens their life. A real man simply outsmarts the bad guy. He believes this person is a coward.
No, stop! Stop! No!
Here's a gun! Open the door!
No!
Ma'am, are you okay?
Yeah, my dad just shot him.
What was that?
My dad just shot him because he pushed him through the door.
Christina, I want you to take a deep breath, okay?
Doesn't she sound like a coward? She kind of sounds like a coward, right? I mean, that's what David Hemingway believes. She's there at home with her father. Someone's trying to break in. They end up using a gun to kill the person who was hell-bent on killing them. But because only 0.9% of people will use a gun to defend themselves, as if, by the way, that's a bad number. We want it to be very low. We'd prefer that no one have to use a gun to defend themselves. Because that number is so low, we should have just let her die. Should have just let her die. Because the only people who own guns are they're these cool super machismo dudes. Definitely not women at all. Who just want to show off because they got guns.
She's crazy. I'm taking the safety off the gun, ma'am. Oh, crap, he's at the back.
Okay, County 13 is advising that you can defend your property if you need to.
I don't want to have to kill this man, but I'll kill him graveyard dead, ma'am. Breaking in now.
He's breaking in.
Got a gun on him. God, I don't want to kill this
man.
I have to kill him, ma'am. I don't want to kill him.
I understand, ma'am. You have to protect yourself.
I will. Ma'am, and they got through the house. I'm going to shoot.
Can you... Oh, my God.
I shot him going out front. I hit him.
I shot him.
God, help me. Oh, please, dear God, I think I've killed him.
Coward, right? Total coward. That's what David Hemingway believes. Anti-gun people are going to use his data to try to make it so that you have less access to guns. Guns that, in those two instances, saved those people's lives. 0.9% of people use guns to protect themselves. I'm okay with that. Number one, the reason why the number is so low is because crime is down. Number two, it's because people understand that more and more of us have guns to protect ourselves, which has a disincentive to the bad guys to go ahead and start to target us. Which, of course, doesn't come up in those numbers because you can't actually track that. There's not many bad guys out there who would say, I'll be totally honest, I would have shot this person, but I didn't because I thought that they had a gun. 0.9% good. That's 0.9% who were able to use a weapon to protect themselves. I'm okay with that. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. KTH Hotline is brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution, 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770.